Hello and welcome to another new episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by my co-host Matt. And today, we got two other great members of the A10 basketball analysis community with us, John and Dan from the West Pine Bills show. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Yeah, we're
thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're happy to be here. I know that this is Dan's first time podcasting with you guys, but a long, long, long time ago, at the beginning of quarantine, COVID, whatever you want to call it, I recorded a podcast with you guys on House That Rick Built. So this is the second time I've gotten the pleasure of talking to you guys. So we're excited to be here.
It is a 3-hour, 15-minute podcast buried in the archives of a show that belongs to no one who is on this right now.
Yep.
So I guess we'll just start things off. The Billikens, after a great non-conference, come back off their one-month COVID pause, get destroyed by Jalen Clutcher, and then lose just a really rough one at LaSalle before bouncing back and beating the first-place St. Bonaventure Bonnies. So really about as vague of a question as I can ask you guys to start this off. How are you feeling about the Billikens right now?
I mean, that's a really complicated answer. So I guess the best way to describe this is going game by game. So I don't know if Dan was the same way, but the Dayton loss hurt, but definitely wasn't like, you know, the sky is falling. SLU had 3 days of practice to prepare for a team that, even though they've had a couple bad losses, is still in the top, you know, 6 or 7 teams of the A-10. So not a big deal. LaSalle definitely didn't feel good. Kind of sky is falling, both on SLU Twitter, us, the SLU message board. Then obviously Saturday feel a lot better after Bonnie's, but still kind of, you know, don't fully think SLU is back to all the way of where they were in December, but don't think that they're as bad as they looked in portions of the Dayton and LaSalle game.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a punch in the face coming out of a 5-week layoff. I know that we were all really, really excited to get back into it, to get going, especially, you know, being in the top 25 for a few straight weeks, peaking at 22, and, you know, just coming out and looking really, really flat, especially on offense, but even on defense. I mean, that's SLU's bread and butter. It's been their bread and butter for a few years now, at least, and just coming out and looking so bad against Dayton, against LaSalle, especially for certain periods of the game. And then when you combine that with not being able to score for minutes at a time, you're just not going to get what you want.
Yeah, Dan, I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I think that's been something interesting with staying with us this season. And, you know, we don't need to get into how I totally missed the mark on projecting how good you guys would be this year. That's well-documented in A10 Twitter. Everyone knows by now. But really, my big concerns going into the year were that St. Louis wasn't going to be able to compete on offense the way people were expecting. It turns out the offense has been great. They're a really good shooting team. You know, they haven't turned the ball over too much, except for a couple games. And really, I think the bigger issue when they've lost has been their defense. So what do you see as really the difference between this year and last year? Because they're still a good defensive team, but analytically, they've gone down just a little bit. And they've had a couple of these rough games where they're just getting lit up from the three-point arc. So have you seen anything like consistent with that that's maybe been causing those problems?
Yeah, so I went back and rewatched the Dayton and LaSalle games. Two of the games, I would say, combined with Minnesota, their worst perimeter defensive games of the year. And something I've noticed is that, you know, traditionally Travis Ford's teams at SLU haven't really switched that much. But since they've come out of this break, they've really switched everything. They don't really adhere as much to a straight-up man defense as much as they used to. And I think that they're just a little poorly timed with their switching and their matchups. And also, when they collapse in like to help out a driver if a man gets beat, they're not recovering, or the term is helping the helper and leaving guys open on the perimeter. It's much more complex than that. And I mean, I'm not smart enough to tell you why any of this is happening, but you can definitely see, on top of kind of just changing their principles, that they're a step slow. I mean, we all want to say that, you know, you can come out of COVID pause and we don't want to blame it entirely, but you also have to acknowledge that these guys are not in the same condition that they were prior to this break. I don't know if Dan has seen anything else, but that's what I've seen from breaking stuff down.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been an issue with switching and with guys, I think, getting kind of mixed up in, you know, are we switching here or are we not? And then leaving guys open, whether it's at the top of the key or letting the driver kind of get a couple steps into the lane and then the help defense slides over and all of a sudden there's another guy on the weak side wide open. And, yeah, I mean, the threes have hurt them a lot, and they've hurt them even in their loss to Minnesota. I mean, giving up 90 points there. But they let opponents go to the line a lot too. And that's what kills them. I mean, I think they're bottom 40 or 50 in the country at like free throw rate that they allow. And I mean, when you're giving teams a lot more free throws than you get, you got to make up those points somehow. And mm-hmm. when your offense stagnates for periods of the game, you can't make up the points, and then that's it.
Yeah, I think one last thing to add to with the defense is that, you know, with the offensive improvement that's come from playing Javonte Perkins more, Gibson Jimerson, you do sacrifice a little bit defensively because those guys aren't necessarily the same one-on-one and team defenders that, you know, a Jordan Goodwin is, a Yuri Collins, et cetera. So I think that, you know, part of it is philosophy, but part of it too is just personnel. And I'm not worried about this defense long term, but, you know, I think instead of looking at yourself as a potential top 30 defense, a top 60 defense, which is about what they're at right now, they're 54th on KenPom. That's about what you're going to get out of this group. And that's still pretty good, but you're going to have nights. I mean, like against Dayton, if you can go against a team and they get hot, they're going to be able to burn you. I mean, even St. Bonaventure, they got looks from the perimeter. They're just not a particularly good perimeter shooting team. So on Saturday, you gave up a lot of wide open looks, but they just didn't have the shooters necessarily to burn you. But you kind of live and die with that. So,
yeah, I'm glad you brought up the personnel issue because I thought this was really interesting. I went on T-Rank before we started recording here, and I know you guys on your podcast, you're very analytically inclined, so maybe you can explain this a little bit better than I can. But just on their box plus minus metrics, all of St. Louis's main rotation players have a defensive box plus minus above one, mm-hmm. but then you have Gibson Jimerson, who gets a lot of minutes, and I think he's started every game for St. Louis. He's at negative 1.6 right now, so I think that kind of speaks to, you know, he's a great offensive player, and you've got to be really happy to get him back. He's shooting 44% from three-point land, which is huge, but he also hasn't really done a whole lot on defense, so I mean, I feel like he's still a really valuable player, and I think he fills a need for the Billikens. Do you think that's worth sacrificing maybe that defense compared to something you'd get from a Fred Thatch, for example?
Matt, real quick, do you want to just give a little breakdown of what the T-Rank defensive ratings mean for some of the people who aren't deep diving the analytics? Because I know that one's not even as common as KenPom, so...
Wait, you want me to break it down?
Just kind of give just a little context.
A higher number is better. I can tell you that. Basically, I feel like it has to do with just how your team performs defensively while you're on the court. But I really can't give that much of a better example. I'm more of just someone that reads the stats, compares to explains them. But
yeah,
I can tell you Jimerson's he's doing much better offensively than defensively. I can pretty confidently say that.
Yeah, I don't know the secret sauce to the defensive rating. Mm-hmm. Dan might, but I know it's some combination, like you said, of defensive plus minus, on off numbers. Steal rate is in there for something, defensive rebound percentage. I think opponent shooting percentage, there's some volume nature to it. I don't fully understand. So, like, T-Rank's awesome. I really do mm-hmm. like it as a free alternative to KenPom. I dive personally more into KenPom, but some of his formulas he doesn't explain as much as others, and that is a slight annoyance. But I know KenPom doesn't really explain most of his numbers, so you know, you got to live with what you can get.
Yep.
But I do think that is a great question with Gibson. I think, and kind of the cop-out answer is, it depends on the matchup. for instance, against a team like Bonnie's when we played on Saturday, a team that you're going to kind of pound inside, even though that game was won from the perimeter, maybe the defensive liability of Gibson isn't as necessary. Like, you don't need that as much in that game. And it sounds weird because he was a really big part of that win. But I think that against teams that are going to clog the lane and really focus on shutting down Hassan French, Martin Linson, Jimmy Bell, Jordan Goodwin, all your slashers, I think those are the games when Gibson's really important. But there are games when, honestly, 15 minutes is probably the cap, because if a team has a dynamic wing to attack him, you know, you can get burned.
So I'm glad that you mentioned that aspect of it. And since you went back and watched the Dayton and LaSalle losses on tape, I'm curious to know, did you see anything that was maybe alarming with any of the on-ball defense for SLU, which has really been kind of one of the great parts of this crew the last few years? Watching the St. Bonaventure game, I felt like Goodwin and Collins really got back to normal in that aspect.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Travis Ford's defense is always, whether they play man or play like that 1-3-1 that he likes to throw out there, it always starts with defense at the top of the key with your lead guards, Goodwin and Collins. You know, I think you're right in that they just seem to have more like energy to go with on Saturday against Bonnie's, but I don't necessarily know if the on-ball defense was as bad against Dayton and LaSalle as much as pick and roll. I know that Dayton hounded. They used Jordy Shimanga and who's the other big? Sissoko. They ran a ton of pick and rolls that SLU just did not. They did not know how to properly hedge, or maybe they just couldn't because of their legs. But I think the on-ball defense did look a lot better against Bonaventure, and I'm not sure if, you know, if it was just pick and roll or if it was, you know, they just couldn't move laterally well enough to shut down ball handlers. I don't know if Dan saw the same thing or not, but I agree. It looked a lot better against Bonaventure, but I didn't see anything markedly different.
Yeah, I mean, we could tell pretty much from the jump in the Bonaventure game that the defense was markedly better than LaSalle and Dayton. I know that we had texted about it during the early stages of that game. I think that a lot of it was the pick and roll, but it's just also leaving shooters open. And even a team that maybe doesn't shoot as well, I don't know the Dayton and LaSalle percentages, but even if a team doesn't shoot that well, you give them enough looks that they're still going to beat you from there. And yeah. And that was SLU's weakness, and it might continue to be so, but hopefully they can get those figured out.
And I'm glad you guys mentioned the pick and roll defense, because Bonaventure, at least early on in the game, was making a concerted effort to really get the screen game going. Basically, I think to pull Goodwin off of Jaron Holmes, and it wasn't working. They weren't getting the switches they wanted. And, you know, we unfortunately didn't get to see really the adjustments and how Jaron Holmes was going to deal with that, because he picked up his second and third fouls pretty quick in the first half. Yeah. But it reached a point where he got really flustered and was – really had kind of stopped even trying to drive to the hoop, which is really one of the most important keys of the Bonnie's offense. And that's all credit to Jordan Goodwin.
Yeah. I mean, I know that Dan has felt this way for a while, but when Jordan Goodwin wants to be, he can arguably be the best perimeter defender in this conference. I know him and I have debated in the past on whether or not he's a better defender than Javon Bess. But when he wants to, he can shut a guy down. It's just a question of, is that going to come out on a given night?
Yeah, and it's frustrating to see the defense kind of get broken down that easily, because it's pretty well known that SLU has just a slew of good one-on-one defenders. I mean, you've got Goodwin, you've got Thatch, you've got Collins, you've got Hassan, but watching that just get broken down, it just kind of makes you wonder, you know, when are we bringing in Thatch off the bench? Or, you know, you need points and you need threes probably, but are you willing to leave Gibson in and let him be a possibly liability on defense? And it's just kind of those problems. You look at it, and I hope Travis Ford has addressed those. It looked like he has, but you know, you never know going forward.
Like Fettelgott, Slew has a slew of good defenders, which is true. I mean, that's really
pun
the
not
thing.
Intended.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is true, though. Like, really, at all times, like, St. Louis is going to have four or five plus defenders on the court. And I think that's just huge. Against the Bonnies, it clearly worked out great. Because really, I would say the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes of that game, they were just really giving St. Bonaventure a lot of trouble. And I thought that was just a big improvement from the first two games of conference play. But I guess we already talked about Goodwin a little bit. Obviously, he's averaging a double-double. He's probably the best rebounding guard in the entire country. But you've also got one of the best, I would even just say the best pure scoring player in the conference, Javonte Perkins. Between those two guys, who do you think is the most important to this team reaching their full potential and potentially winning a couple games in March Madness?
I mean, so personally, I think Javonte is a little bit more important. And this is like a 51-49 type thing. It's not that one is, you know, going to carry you. But Jordan Goodwin, for how awesome he is, he's a known commodity at this point. His numbers have improved. His efficiency's improved. His raw totals have improved from his freshman year to now. And he's one of the best Billikens ever. But the whole reason that people were so high on this team was because of the play of Javonte Perkins down the stretch last year. As we saw for stretches this year, last year, you know, against Bonaventure on Saturday, when he gets hot, like you said, he's arguably the best scorer in this conference. And he adds an element that we really haven't seen at SLU since Larry Hughes. So for me, it's Perkins. I love everything that Jordan does, but it's also a lot easier to take Jordan out of a game. And I think that that's the really interesting thing about Javonte, is that while you can shut him down for 15, 20 minutes, eventually he's going to get his. And he has a lot of different ways that he can do it.
I'm actually going to go against John here. I think that Jordan Goodwin is a little bit more crucial to the team, especially, you know, if we can hopefully get to the tournament. I mean, what he brings to the floor, he is a known commodity, but like when he brings it, he brings it. And it's on the defensive end, he's shown the ability to at least knock down a jumper if he needs to. He can heat up, not like Perkins can, but he still can do it. And he's all over the place. I mean, you look up, you blink, and all of a sudden the guy's got 8 points and 9 rebounds, and you just don't know. I mean, he cleans up the glass on both sides. He gets the loose balls. He gets, you know, the putback layups. I mean, he's there. He the deflections, the steals. I mean, it might not come in terms of points, but it comes in kind of the other spots in the box score, and also the intangibles. I mean, he's very, very clearly the team leader. And when he shows that example, I think it encourages a lot of the other guys like Yuri Collins or like Hassan to be able to lock down a little bit more and, you know, show that, you know, this is an important game that we need to win and you got to do whatever you can. I think he's a great leader and he really leads by example.
Yeah, I'm really glad you guys disagreed on that, because I do think it's a really tough question. And it's actually something I think like 2 weeks ago, Tyler and I disagreed on one of our podcasts. We're talking about all conference teams, and I was saying Jordan Goodwin's in the running for player of the year. Tyler had Javonte Perkins as his pick right now. And I really do think you could go either way, and I wouldn't really complain, because they are just both so impressive, and they do have very different skill sets, which is also interesting. But yeah, I'm glad you guys have those points of view, because I do think like there isn't really a bad answer to that question.
Yeah, I also sorry to cut you off, Tyler.
Oh, so I was just gonna say, what's funny too is like I personally believe that Goodwin is the more important guy, just because I mean I think he's one of the three best defenders in the A-10 at least this season. He's obviously one of the best rebounders, and when he can do that from the two guard position, that's a value that's completely unmatched. But I believe that if SLU can get themselves into the top two or three, that Perkins is going to just get better honors when you look at the way that people tend to treat like player of the year. Goodwin's going to end up first team no matter what, Whereas Perkins, if Slew struggles, might not get there, but Perkins is more likely to win player of the year in my mind.
So it's kind of, I'm glad you asked this question just in general, because I wrote down some notes coming into this just about, you know, what Slew needs to do to kind of get to the place we think they can get and what they had shown in December. And for both Perkins and Goodwin were the two players I highlighted. They both kind of struggled so far in the return in their own ways. Javonte is averaging more points than he did prior to the pause. He's right at 18 points per game in conference, but he's only shooting 23% from three. He's 4-17, which is very uncharacteristic, especially over the last 12 months. I mean, Goodwin's only averaging 10 points per game right now in conference. He's shooting really poorly from the free throw line. He's at 22%, and he's had a decent jump in turnovers, almost a full more per game than he was at before. So I definitely think that regardless of who you think is more important, if those two aren't going consistently, Slew will not, you know, they're not going to make an NCAA tournament. Those two guys are going to have to carry them there, and they're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting.
In the Dayton game, you kind of saw it too, where I think a big part of their offensive struggles for basically the first 36 or so minutes of that game was that Perkins just never got going. And if you look, if you hadn't seen the game, you look back in the box score, you think, oh, Javonte Perkins, great game. He really caught fire at the end there.
Yeah.
And if you were watching, you would have actually thought he had 10 instead of the, I think he got the 21.
Yeah, that was a box score that when you go back and look, you're like, that's not indicative of, I mean, that game wasn't, what did that end up at, 5 or 6? That game was not as close as that score indicated. Because that game was pretty much, I don't want to say over from the jump, but by halftime, that game was not really in question, at least watching as a fan, because it just felt like, you know, there was not going to be that extra gear. There just wasn't going to be anything. And I give credit to Dayton for that. They're a really good perimeter defensive team. They're the one team that, when Slew was off, I got to watch a lot of the conference. They're the one team I would say that probably defends, or they're like the height of their defense is about what I think Slew can be, even though Slew has taken a step back this year.
We've seen that from Dayton this year, where, and this is kind of indicative of Dayton as a whole. The ceiling is so high, and they've had 30 minute, I guess maybe not that long, but they've had basically halves where the defense looks just as good as last year, and they never maintain it through a full game. That's kind of what happened with LaSalle, where they looked like a freaking, like the Lakers going up against the college team for the first 10 minutes, and they end up losing the game.
Was LaSalle the game that one of you two tweeted about? It caused that you to tweet about Fordham to say, like, I don't know if Fordham will score 20 against
Dayton.
That
was Dayton. The best 10 minutes of
that was not me.
Defense I've it was, seen it in was one of you two. Game in a long time.
I mean, it blew
my mind, and then they just completely crumbled in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, that's a question I kind of want to tweet out at some point. Like, is LaSalle a bad loss for teams at this point?
If you're like trying to make an NCAA tournament, yes.
But, if like, how bad relatively? Because another win or two over a top team, and, like, it's not terrible. Part of this is just to assuage my own, like, my own subliminal fears about, you know, the goal of standard ruining a bunch of seasons. But I mean, I know that this is kind of becoming a thing now. Like, I'm pretty impressed with the job that Ashley Howard is doing with, you know, call it what it is, minimal talent at LaSalle.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And I just think LaSalle this year has to be the most interesting team we've seen in the last 3 years since we started this podcast. Just the fact that they now have wins over each of the three preseason favorites, and then they follow it up this weekend losing to Fordham. It's almost like, based on how the A-10's going this year, it's like, is that even surprising? Just because they have been so inconsistent. But it is very impressive that they have picked up those big wins. Unfortunately, though, like Tyler said, I just don't know if the committee's going to be as forgiving as maybe some A-10 fans will be.
Well, and that's the thing I'm really torn with now, is like, I don't know if I should be rooting for LaSalle against Bonaventure this week to make that loss a little better,
or if I should be rooting for Bonaventure just to blow the doors off of them to make the Bonaventure win better.
I mean, I've already decided that LaSalle's doing everything in their power to kill the three-bid league dream, and they're just...
Yeah.
Ashley Howard and Jameer Brickus, all those guys are just trolling us right now, so I'm fully expecting a LaSalle win over the Bonnies, and I can't wait for the Golden Standard memes. It's going to be amazing. It happened to us. I mean, I'm a Dayton fan. I was the first one that had to go through it, so...
That's the thing, like, you know, when it happened, I was, like, upset, and then I saw their tweets, and I was like, okay, this is pretty, like, didn't numb the pain, but I'm like, these guys are just having fun, so.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to those guys. Like, honestly, the past couple years, I haven't had too much of a reason to care about LaSalle basketball. They just haven't been an interesting team, really, but now with them winning these big games, with the Golden Standard having a big Twitter presence, and just LaSalle Twitter in general getting bigger, that's been a pretty fun story in the A-10, even though it has kind of hurt the conference as a whole, but you know what,
it'll be interesting to see like how much it hurts the conference, because if you do end up getting three teams in, I don't know how much, you know, LaSalle flirting with 500 really hurts you, but then again, we could get one, and I don't know.
Yeah,
no one really knows.
It could be one, it could be, I'm not going to say four, although there are four teams like right on the bubble, and if things go perfectly and the A-10 gets more respect, like, you never know. I'm not getting my hopes up for that at all, but I think, like, I'm confident we're going to get multiple bids. Three's looking a little bit questionable right now, but I think it's still alive for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm cynical. I think that the committee's going to do whatever they can to get as many major teams in as possible, as every year, but especially this year. I mean, I'm prepared for Duke and North Carolina to both make the field, and neither
Carolina
of them
is. But they're actually, that team's actually like, decent.
They're not. I don't know. They don't impress me that much. I don't look at their metrics that much either. But
just wait for Kentucky.
Oh my! if Kentucky makes the dance, there is something fundamentally broken with the NCAA tournament.
What are they, 5-12 now?
Yeah. John Rothstein is the corniest man in college basketball, but his tweets about things you thought you would never tweet, Kentucky is 5-12 or 5-11, like every single game, just like stop. Just stop, man. Like they're bad. Just give it a rest. They're bad.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully we can at least take Kentucky off the bubble this year, but I mean, just kind of taking this all full circle with LaSalle, like, it's one of those things that'll hurt the fact that the committee's not going to watch, like, all 360 teams. If this was college football, it might be different, and maybe LaSalle could get more respect than what they show on paper, but, like, they just played, like, garbage against Fordham this weekend, and they got like, literally smacked across the face by St. Peter's back in November, and like their resume on paper, that's just going to be a horrible loss no matter what they do the rest of the year, sadly. You got to just root for the Bonnies to be good so that win just looks fantastic.
Which I don't think that's a stretch, because like Bonaventure honestly does look, they look every bit the part of a tournament team. It's just a question of like, can they avoid landmines? And that's really the question with everybody that's in the top, I guess, 3 to 4 on the bubble, so to speak. That's really the thing. If you can avoid landmines and you can beat the teams you're supposed to beat and win a couple games, maybe where you're punching above your weight, you're going to put yourself in a good spot.
And both the Bonnies losses were games where they really just didn't have homes. He only played 1 minute against Rhodey. He played like half the game against you guys. But, and even then, if SLU was basically playing a B-plus level of ball, Bonaventure would have won that game.
Yeah,
they've really only had one bad game this season. So I got in a debate on Twitter about really what they have to do to make the tournament. But this team's so consistent, I'm not worried about them dropping a bad game.
No, I'm not either. And something that I know Dan and I had talked about going into the game, just personally, like, I really want them to get the second Bonaventure SLU game on the schedule, and I would prefer it to be in at Bonaventure. But despite how good Bonnies has looked, I think they're the team that SLU matches up with the best in the entire conference. A matchup with them does not concern me, really. Like, obviously every game concerns you a bit, but that's the team that, for whatever reason, Travis Ford has Mark Schmidt's number. I don't know why, I can't fully understand it, but they match up really well with them.
So I want to throw this in, just a little gold nugget I found today. Obviously, SLU has like 8 games that theoretically could be rescheduled this year that got postponed. But if you go on St. Louis's, this is the official schedule on their website. It says at the top, the date for the Billikens game at St. Bonaventure is to be determined. Mm-hmm. There is no other game listed there. So basically, St. Louis is saying that they expect to play that game.
So the only thing I would put caution with for that is that that's been that way since the start of the season.
Maybe
that
that's
was
why.
That was a home and home pairing that they never nailed down the second date for. I'm not sure why, but that's been that way the entire season. Cause I thought that a couple weeks ago too. And then someone reminded me that no, if you go back and look at the cache version of the site, it's been that way the whole time.
I mean, right now I'm fully expecting that that open last spot of the season, that first weekend of March before the A-10 tournament, St. Louis is going to go to Bonaventure and VCU is going to go to Richmond. Yeah. Unless something happens and the conference has an opportunity to put those games earlier in the year and make sure that they're going to be played.
So I believe that it was Unfurled that reminded us of this, but that first weekend in March, historically, if you look at the last 4 years, I believe, that has been a SLU and Bonaventure spot. Like, yep. I'm not sure why they just didn't put that on the schedule right away this year, but historically, that's when that game takes place. So I wouldn't be surprised if they shuffle some stuff around and it happens that day. But then again, that comes with a contingency of they might get that in before, because right now, what is it, 6 teams are on pause in the A-10?
6, yep.
Yeah, so there's a lot of shuffling. I mean, SLU is supposed to play Fordham on Saturday, and there's no guarantee that game happens. This could be another one-game week.
And that's the only one of the 7 games scheduled this weekend that does not involve a team on pause. So that's actually the most certain game we have at the moment.
Oh, no, Fordham's not on pause right now, actually.
Fordham is.
I mean, yeah, they've been on pause for about 25, 30 years. I don't know when they last made a tournament. But, yeah, no, it is ridiculous what's happening in the A-10 right now. But I did want to go back to this point. John, I agree with you. I think St. Bonaventure is a pretty good matchup for St. Louis because mm-hmm. the Bonnies don't shoot the 3-wall. And I know the announcers said this about 2,000 times, but I do think the physical Billiken bigs give Oshun a bit of trouble. But as we get closer to the A-10 tournament, what's the one team for you guys that you think St. Louis would want to avoid? And just what do you think's the toughest matchup in the conference right now?
I honestly think, personally, I don't really want to see Davidson. I know that they're one of the best offensive teams in the conference. They shoot the ball well, and that's where you can kind of get past SLU, where if you can be able to break their defense down and fend off the zone looks that they're going to give you, be able to knock down threes, SLU, there's a good chance SLU's not going to be able to score with you. And then, like, that's how you beat them. And we saw it last year at Davidson. That was one of the worst SLU games I've ever watched. But otherwise, I mean, the rest of the top of the conference, like Bonaventure, we mentioned SLU matches up well with them. I think the same thing about VCU and Richmond too. I mean, those are teams that can all come out and beat you if you don't play well. But I think the team that SLU matches the worst against is Davidson. And that's why I just don't really want to see him.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly everything what Dan says about Davidson. I would like to see that game happen just because Bob McKillop is such a fantastic coach, and he will make Travis Ford and the Billikens work to adjust on the fly and make those adjustments that you're going to need if you want to be a team that plays in March. But for me, the team that honestly I think that gives them the biggest problem for a multitude of reasons is Dayton. As much as I think that SLU is better than Dayton this year, Jalen Crutcher has SLU's number, period, point blank. I don't think you can debate that at this point. I know that some people do want to debate that. You can't debate that. Two, their perimeter defense really forces SLU inside and takes away the thing that's kind of been their differentiating factor this year. And three, I think Anthony Grant's a really good coach. Obviously, there's no indication it's not going to happen, but I want that game to be played at Dayton because it gives you, you know, another good test for March, even if the Flyers aren't going to be a team that's dancing this year. So I think that team is one that scares me. And if you're looking at the scheduled games remaining, I think that's the most likely that SLU is going to drop. Granted, that can change, though, with Davidson getting added.
So do we need to keep these clips for just in case Slew's in the first four out going into the Intent tournament, and then they have to play Duquesne to start things off. Like, should we just go ahead and schedule your NIT home game at that point?
So here's the thing with Duquesne. I think prior to Sincere Curie leaving, I was not afraid of Duquesne this year. I'm still not, but I really don't know what to think about them now, because the development of Tavian Dunn-Martin as a pass-first point guard is, like, if you gave me 100 things to happen this year in the A-10, that's not on my list of 100 things. I don't think anyone would have predicted that. But I do – I mean, do I want Slew to get a shot at Duquesne after those two awful games last year? Yeah, I do. Do they scare me necessarily? I don't know. They're not super deep, but it's tough to say because their identity has changed a lot.
I don't know if Duquesne should scare you, but Marcus Weathers should at least scare you. And that's the whole point of this.
I know.
Dude, after his back-to-back 26-point games last year, like, I'm preparing myself for anything potentially happening in that game, even though St. Louis is just a whole notch better.
He's a guy, one of the most unique players in the conference, and he's one of the few players I don't necessarily think most teams have someone you can match up with defensively. He's a little too strong to put a wing on him, and he's a little too quick for a traditional big to guard him. I would love to see him go and bang against Martin Linson for 30 minutes because he is sneakily one of my favorite players, but I also think he'd be able to score on him, so I don't really want to see that.
But I do think that last year, when they lost to Duquesne, I mean, you're missing arguably the best defensive player on your team in Fred Thatch, and I think that he might make all the difference in the world when it comes to that matchup.
That probably is the guy that they would slap on him. That would probably be the one time this year I think Fred Thatch might start.
I think he should maybe start every single game.
We've had this conversation. I don't disagree.
So I want to throw out one quick theory here, and then you guys are leading me into really what is one of my favorite questions for basically all of our guests, but it works even better for the Billikens. But, you know, I'll mention this quickly in passing because we may not even see St. Louis play Duquesne. I want to see St. Louis try Yuri Collins on Weathers for at least a possession or two. Basically, the Rajon Rondo on LeBron playoff theory, because there's no chance Weathers could actually dribble on him, and you're basically just forcing him to take post-ups the whole time. I just think it would be interesting. But my question to you guys, and St. Louis poses a better quandary of this than any other team in the league right now. It's a tie game. There's a minute to go. Let's say it's not a weird matchup team.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you rolling with here to end the game? Who are the five that you just put your trust in? Because Slew has 6 or 7 crunch time quality players.
John?
So I'll start because I think ours might differ a little bit. I think Yuri Collins 100% has to be on the court. Javonte Perkins has to be on the court. Goodwin, Martin Linson, and honestly, give me Fred Thatch. I think offensively he doesn't present a big drop-off from Gibson, and defensively he is probably the second-best defender on Slew.
Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of it depends on who's got the hot hand that day and whatnot. But if you're just giving the general scenario, I mean, Goodwin's got to be out there. Yuri's got to be out there. I think Demaryius Jacobs should be out there.
Oh, shit.
I mean, Demaryius Jacobs
I
took your guy. But Demaryius Jacobs is quietly one of the most effective players Slew has. The fact that he comes off the bench it just adds kind of a whole nother layer to the team. So I'd probably go Perkins, Goodwin, Jacobs, Yuri Collins, and then I switch almost every day between French and Linson. I love everything that Linson does, but I mean, French just kind of provides his own, I guess, level of play. So provided he's not in foul trouble and he has the right matchup, I'd like to see him out there.
I mean, the thing is though, and what I struggle with is I love Hassan French. I do. He's almost unplayable in late game situations. And
that's also true.
Like, it's just, I love the guy. I feel for him.
clearly free throws are something that it's more than just a physical thing, but man, I mean, it's bad. It's not good.
So it's kind of funny. One thing I noticed in both the LaSalle and Bonaventure games is Ford gave Goodwin his second rest of the half kind of late in the half. So yeah. It was Perkins and Collins, whichever center was out there. And then he was rolling with Thatch and a shooter, mm-hmm. knowing that he could give himself another 2 minutes to see how the game played out, and then put Goodwin back in for whoever they didn't need. And I just thought that was kind of creative.
Yeah. The nice thing is that more so than years past, this is the first year that Travis has really had a bench at SLU. For various reasons, injuries, guys leaving the program, a bunch of different stuff that happens every year. This is the first year that he really has horses to run with. I mean, since returning from break, Terrence Hargrove, who came on strong at the end of last year, he's only played 30 seconds, and that was against Dayton. I mean, there are a lot of guys that he can use for combinations, and what I've noticed since coming back is he'll pull one of your, lead dogs a lot quicker than in years past. So I think that's something to keep your eye on, that if Goodwin continues to not really shoot free throws well down the stretch, he might just roll with Fred Thatch and Demaryius Jacobs over him. And I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily.
Yeah, and it's driving me nuts that Jimmy Bell Jr. is putting up 9 minutes a game after he was so good last year.
Yeah.
But then I look at the season stats, and I'm just not sure who he's going to take those minutes from.
So Jimmy Bell's an interesting case this year. I don't know if he broke his foot or just had a really bad strain in the weeks leading up to the season, but he never really was in shape. And obviously for a guy that has had fluctuating weight issues coming into his time as a college basketball player, there's a really good basketball player in Jimmy Bell. It's just that he has to be conditioned and he needs those on-court reps. And he missed a lot of that preseason development time. And he's competing with a very seasoned, fourth-year big man in Martin Linson, and he's a guy that's shown he's worthy of playing. So you're right, it's hard to find him minutes, and minutes are going to be sparse next year too with the transfer Francis Okoro from Oregon, who's coming eligible, who's probably going to slide into Hassan's spot.
Yeah, and I don't want to directly criticize anyone in Duquesne's program for leaving, because you don't, especially with COVID this year, you don't know the circumstances, but we saw with Duquesne, another team that's just super deep and has a lot of guys. Lamar Norman and Sincere Carey leave. Maceo Austin had something that forced him to be away from the program for a while. And to me, I'm all for guys getting a chance to transfer without sitting out. I know. Mm-hmm. I just think you pick a college, you get there. Sometimes it's just not a fit. But what I don't like is guys bailing in the middle of the season. And the way things mm-hmm. are going right now, St. Louis should have lost two guys by this point. And all of these dudes have stuck it out, and they're at least going to fight through the rest of the season for their teammates, because, you could have lost a guy like Jimmy Bell. And right now, maybe it doesn't matter, but what happens if if Hassan French gets hurt or Martin Linson gets hurt, and then you're going to be desperately missing that guy.
I mean, he's a fantastic insurance policy to have. A guy who started 20 something games last year. He's a good piece, and I'm glad that he's part of our program. We're really big fans of his on West Pine Bills. And I think that his time will come. That's a cliche in sports, but an opportunity always comes around. I hope it's at SLU.
Well, and I do think that Travis Ford has obviously shown a willingness to play a lineup with Hassan French and Jimmy Bell. I mean, they both started last year a bunch of games. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, if Travis Ford is willing to do that, that just adds, another big body that the opponent has to match up with. And so if they're weak on the inside, I could definitely see that happening. And then, I mean, honestly, he adds a guy who's going to make free throws from the post spot, and Linson does the same. But I mean, when you're at the end of the game and you need free throws, or you need, big rebounds, especially on the offensive end, that's where he shines, especially mm-hmm. for a big man from the line. So, I mean, he has spots where he can be really, really effective, and Ford is willing to put him in with other big guys. So I think it's just depends on the matchups and the other rotations that Ford wants to use.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so glad you bring up the free throw shooting, because I think this is the most important question that will be posed all podcast. St. Louis is at 72.2% at the line this year, which is like truly respectable for the first time in years.
Yep.
It's still not great and might not even be good, but it's passable. Who do you trust at the line in the final minute of a game this year? Because last year, I think it was only Javonte Perkins.
Javonte's number one. I want the ball in his hands down the stretch, whether or not it's to get to the line or just to shoot from the field. That's the guy I want with the ball. The second guy is Demaryius Jacobs. I think that he offensively might be the most skilled player that they have, but he's a really solid player from the free throw line. And then third is probably Jimmerson, but he doesn't really garner a ton of attempts because of just how his game is. But those three are the guys where I'm really confident that, you know, you're not going to miss two free throws, which right. is a low and, bar to clear.
And I'd put Fred Thatch up there too. I mean, he doesn't have a ton of attempts, but I mean, he's 14 for 15 on the year. Mm-hmm. He shows that he can get it done. And, you know, if you need just one, I feel very, very confident he'll be able to get that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Gibson Jimmerson 7 for 7 on the season too. Right. So low attempts, but that also comes off of 86% on low attempts last year. So
yeah,
right.
Not and surprising at all.
I mean, he's your typical, you know, he's your typical 3-point shooter. If you get anything inside the arc out of him, that is gravy.
Right.
That's not a bad thing.
And even Yuri Collins is up at 75%, and that's 12 for 16. So again, low sample size, but I mean, he's a guy that I know that he could shoot free throws in high school. And then all of a sudden he showed up last year and could do it. And so now for him to be able to at least be league average, if you want to call it that, like that's totally fine.
Yep.
So we'll close it out with this. You hate to look too forward to specific games right now, but believe it or not, right now, SLU has the most stable-looking schedule of any A-10 team this week. Slated to play Rhode Island and Fordham. We're in a rare situation in the conference right now where all three of those teams are actively playing and practicing. So after the up-and-down start to conference play, what's one specific thing that each of you guys are going to be looking for in those two games?
So in both games, the main things I'm looking for is, sounds weird this far in the season, but conditioning. Do they have their legs back like they did against Bonaventure? And then offensive flow. I mean, results are one thing, putting the ball in the basket. There's a degree of variance to that. But are you getting good looks? Are you, you know, moving the defense? Are you getting good possessions where you're getting, you know, you're extracting effort out of your defenders? Or are you just going down the court, passing the ball around the arc a couple times, jacking up whatever crap you can get? I think that if they can have flow and they can play with some aggressiveness and their legs are good, I am not worried about this team shaking off more of this rust.
Yeah, I think a couple things that I'll be looking for, and I know that we've mentioned them a little bit earlier, but I think that it's how are you going to play defense? I mean, are we going to see a lot of switches like we saw in those losses? Or are we going to see, you know, guys stay on their man, maybe even switch into zone at times, but because they've got a couple different looks they can give you there. And then I think that one of the more important ones too is the pace that they want to play at, and that goes with the conditioning as well. But I mean, SLU's a team that likes to force a lot of turnovers. I think they're top 25, top 30 in turnover defense in the country. So, I mean that. They'll turn you over and then they'll make you run. So we see a lot of Goodwin and Yuri Collins runouts down the other end. And yeah, it just depends on if they're able to be that active that they're you know, conditioned enough to be able to get those easy points.
And the only thing I want to add is I just want to see how Javonte Perkins' jumper starts to fall into place again.
That too. I didn't mention it at all throughout this point, but I noticed against Bonaventure, his release, he's coming across his face when before he was one of those vertical players in the country. If he can get his timing back, that's the thing I'm going to be looking for a lot, especially now that I've noticed this thing.
I'm not going to go into my Jordan Goodwin hitch rant. That's We're far too late in the pod for me to go on about how he needs to like stand three steps behind the foul line and walk into his shot. That's a conspiracy theory for another day. But before I let you guys go, yes or no, is St. Louis going to make the tournament this year?
Yes.
Yes.
Two super optimistic guys right there. They have been all year. If you're listening to their podcast, the West Pine Bills Show, can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Also, great Twitter presence at West Pine Bills. Be sure to give these guys a follow. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Another thank you to John and Dan from the West Pine Bills for enlightening us on some of the things going on with St. Louis basketball right now. And thank you to all of you for tuning in to another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, we really appreciate it if you give us 5 stars on iTunes. If you have any ways that the show can be better or things that you think we're doing well that we should continue to do, be sure to reach out to us on Twitter. That's at the number 3-Bid League pod. Or you can shoot us an email, number3bidleague@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe out there.